Blog Talk Radio.
Python Radio. Today is May 22nd. Tonight we have Ed Lilly on, and we're going to talk caging and carpets. What's going on, Owen? How's it going?
Oh, it is a great week here. Thank God. you know, I've been like wrestling with my females all year. It's like, please lay your eggs, and they're like, no. And then please lay your eggs, and they're like, no. 10 days late, my lesser tiger female Trinity decided to drop eggs, and I sent you a picture of her coiled around the eggs, and I'm like, how many eggs do you think are in here? And you were like 14, and I took insults to it, and I'm like,
yeah,
14? And then your text back was, I'm sorry, I forgot who I was speaking to. So the final count was 33.
Wow. 33.
So 33, all beautiful, red, veiny, perfect.
Nice.
So it was definitely very cool. And I'm like, all right, it was one more than she had last year, too. So we're improving slowly. But I'm excited because now it's like, all right, baby carpets are coming.
Nice.
Oh. I've had such a bad year. I'm like, okay, more than 17 babies are coming. We're okay now. Everything's all right. I don't just have corn snakes.
Nice.
So it was definitely very cool, and it's been a cool week. I'm excited to talk to Ed because, as you and I have talked many times, I know you're eventually moving at some point to a new digs, and you're going to want to do a room up, right? And I have my room where nothing matches, and it, you know, drives me crazy. So I'm going to want to redo my room, and then we were both over at Howard's place at Carpet Fest, and we're staring at his cages, and we're like, what the hell? Everything looked
nice and
so
neat. And,
yeah, I know.
Like, my OCD was kicking in.
Neat. Yeah, it's like, this is what it should be.
Right.
My God. So I'm definitely interested to talk cages and stuff. So
Yes, I'm excited about that. And, you know, Ed has some cool caging. I know as soon as I get some things that I have to pay off, that's going to be my next investment in my reptile business. Is going to be the key.
You have so many things now, and so crazy. But how are things going over with your stuff?
Well, let's see. The Zebra Jag clutch number 2 that I had to the Diamond Jag Sib. This one didn't go as well as the other two. There was a moldy egg in the, and of course this was internal incubation, and there was a moldy egg in the clutch. Yeah. And funny thing was is that none of the other eggs were moldy. even though they all touch the eggs. The only thing I can think of as far as there was three that were bad, and when I say bad, there was babies in it, and they were, you know,
full term,
ready to go, and. I got no movement out of the eggs, and of course I called you up, and I waited to see if they would come out, and they didn't. And of course it was two zebra jags and a zebra, so that was a little disappointing. But I did get one zebra jag, and I definitely can tell a difference between that zebra jag and the zebra jags to the red tiger.
I was going to ask you if that's going to be like a obvious difference, or we're gonna have to wait over time to see how that goes.
Nah, I could definitely see a difference right away. Like the one zebra jag to the red tiger. I don't know if that's what there's two of them in there that could be the tiger gene at play. The one looks like a walma. It has that thin banding on the side, and the more it grows, the more that banding is coming out. So it's like a carpet python, but looks like a walma.
The walma paint.
Yeah. So.
Are we sure it's not a Woma?
No Womas over
here. No Womas. Okay. All right. So I want to make sure. It's like, you know, you didn't like, I like somebody didn't like accidentally slip a Woma egg in there on you.
Yeah. So the two jags though that I got out of the clutch are pretty interesting looking. I mean, I think they're like I don't know how they're just different looking than what I've seen with jags. I don't know if it's a very clean. I'm curious to see how they turn out once they start shedding and how they progress. So, and then basically the rest of the clutch was just sibs, so or into grades or whatever you want to call it.
Blackhead
food.
I mean, what? But we can talk about. I saw this interesting carpet python on Facebook, and I know you did too. Precision has it, and it popped out of an egg recently, and say sun glow.
Yes, that was on my list to talk about. I like it, Owen. You're being proactive tonight.
I'm being proactive. I had a Red Bull, and for some odd reason, it's making me a better co-host. So I think you suggest you invest in a case of them for me. Okay.
Enough.
Simple enough. My God, yeah. But this sun glow. First he put up a picture of it, and I will admit, he put up a picture of it alone, and I'm like, all right. I mean, I can't really tell the difference right now. I mean, I'm like, okay, there it is. I assume when it gets older, I'll be like, my God. But right now it's like, all right. Then he put up a picture of it next to an albino baby, and you can see the difference between the normal albino baby and the sun glow baby.
Yes.
The sun glow baby is a little bit brighter, and you can see some color contrast. You're like, okay. So,
yeah.
I guess we should pay attention to this thing right now. So,
yeah,
that's definitely gonna be cool.
Yeah, what's cool about that is that I have my female caramel head albino. She's eating medium rats, and I'm hoping that she gets up to size next season, and she is destined to meet up with the jag head albino. So
you're going to have jag, potentially, if I read this correctly, jaguar sun glows.
Could be, yes.
Could be.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So
no.
Can we hatch them here, too? So far, I've done well for you, and I like to see these things when they come out and be like, oh, my God. But
take them away.
Then you take them away because, you know, technically they belong to you or some jazz.
Yeah.
But, no, that's it's definitely cool. And it's really cool because, you know, we're all these cool – in the past, you know, before the days of, you know, Eric Burke, these things were happening and they're happening in Germany.
Yeah.
Now they're happening not too far away. So if I want to see it, I come over. And they'd be like, cool. So, and then, you know, if I want a huge wharf or something, you're right there. So,
yeah.
Plus, there's my co-host discount of 95%. So.
Yeah. But they're, let's see, they're $25,000. So,
holy shit.
Oh, no, I don't know. I just made that
problem. Oh, my God. Give me a mild heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to be like the ball python market.
Yeah.
Don't turn us into that, please.
Well, I was just trying to make the money
sell your
back.
Car. You can have a snake if you, you know, sell your car, Owen. Oh!
Oh, so, yeah, so that's pretty cool. Some pretty cool things going on in the carpet python world. It's cool to see stuff like that happen.
In a couple years, we're going to see some really, really cool stuff.
Yep. One of the other things that I'm glad that Austin Horst, he posted up his Silver Coastal. Did you see that?
Yeah. That was cool. I did see that.
The one thing I wanted to bring up is that I don't know if you've had this happen to you, but, you know, there was like, you know how like certain clutches come out and you're like, oh, I'm going to get something from that clutch. And then you like, for whatever reason, you sort of, you put it off, you don't get it, you know, and then like, you know, it's a couple of years
mean,
later.
Like, the breeder says like, oh, I'm putting these babies together. And you're like, I should get one of those all the time, dude.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So a couple of years, kind of find it again.
And then they never do the pairing again. Well, I think that came from George and Pewter pairing. I forget his name, but I know it goes by Farmer on the Morelia Python form, and he's the one that did that pairing. And I think he had a couple other babies that hatched out that looked like that, but, you know. I just was wondering if that was something that anybody else goes through where they're like, ah, so, you know, I should have got that and I didn't. Damn it.
Yeah, yeah. I have a big one where I should have gotten it, but I didn't. They're called Citrus Tigers. And I really wanted one. And this asshole named Eric Burke
picked them all up.
Bought the entire freaking clutch. So. Yeah, we could talk about that if you want.
Yeah.
But
And did you see Chris's Coastal? What did you think
of
that, Chris?
I was just about to say that. Chris Behoff?
Yeah.
Yeah, he. I don't know why, but he, like, I'm watching him on Facebook. He's, like, posting the picture of this hypo coastal, this hypo-ish coastal, on, like, everybody who I know is a carpet python enthusiast and or breeder's Facebook page that he's friends with. So it's like, why are you taunting everyone? Why would you do this? Like, right after he posted it online, he throws on Terry Phillips, and I'm like, geez. So, but I did see it, and I love the color. I would love to know what the hell made that thing. It's insane.
You have Malukans, so you would know. Don't it have, like, the color of the Malukans?
It does. My male Blaze Malukan looks very, very close to that. And then my baby Malukan male camo is just starting to get that kind of color. So, yeah, it kind of reminds me of Malukan color. But I love that he's got it right on. It is hypo-ish. It looks like it would be doing something very cool.
Yeah.
And it's an adult. So where the hell did this thing come from? So
I think he said he picked it up on Craigslist. He finds the most random.
What the hell?
Yeah,
the hell?
I think that's where he found Johnny Blaze too on Craigslist. He must like scour Craigslist and find all the
Craigslist right now.
find all the.
Tell you
cool
if I find
things.
A super jet zebra right on Craigslist right now, I'm done. No more king snake. It's all gonna be here. But I would love to see what that thing would do with. Other, like, morphs, like, you know, throwing it to Jag, see what happens with that. And I also love, that would just be an even better story if this thing does turn out to be a viable hypo morph and it came from Craigslist.
Yeah.
Because then every major carpet breeder in the world will scour Craigslist or shoot themselves for not scouring Craigslist. So.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah.
That's cool. And I got two more things before we bring Ed on. Is I don't know if this is a bit of Chondro news, and it's maybe a week late, but Ella Diablo, I don't know if you've ever seen that Chondro. As soon as you're done, you Google it, Owen, and you look it up. But unfortunately, she passed away. She had cancer. But What a chondro, man. That's one nice chondro. And the other thing I had was I posted up a link over on the Facebook page about there was a news little news excerpt that had the guys that are going and hunting Owen Pelly pythons. So they showed you know, them headed out, and I think they have one so far. And you know, it's pretty neat. It's pretty cool how they're trying to you know, put them in captivity, and certain people have invested in it, and you know, they're trying to make sure that they don't go extinct. So it's pretty cool.
So basically, you've already called these people and told them you want Owen Pelly and that they're to bring it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Please, no. I needed to complete the collection.
Yeah.
He's hung up on you, I mean.
I think it's $15,000 for a pair.
Will they do payment plans?
That I don't know.
We'll have to see.
Maybe they'll trade a zebra tiger jag. I don't know.
Who knows? If they are in Australia, then they might.
Yeah. Let's see. I think that's all I have. So I guess we'll bring Ed on to and get this going. Hey, Ed, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Yep. Glad to be on here.
Awesome. So, Ed, we're just going to jump in like we do with everybody else. And why don't you tell us what got you into reptiles in the first place?
What got me into reptiles? I don't know. I've always been into animals, period. So I had fish and all kinds of critters, and I think I was about sixth grade. Kid across the street's mother had a Burmese python, and I just dug that. So that's what got me into reptiles. And from there, my parents wouldn't let me keep reptiles. So as soon as I moved out, I got a lot of them, and I've had them ever since.
Cool.
Awesome. Awesome. That's usually how it goes. It's just kind of, you start once, get the bug, and then boom. You sit like me and you start counting and you stop when you hit 50 because you don't want to count anymore. Anyway,
yep.
Now what brought you to carpet pythons in specifically?
Talking with customers, Eric Kohler, Nick Mutton, you know. People tell me about their projects and what's going on and that kind of stuff. After a while, I decided to pick up a couple, and the couple became a couple more. And then at some point,
right.
I started selling off my boas, so I had more room for carpets. And now I pretty much have carpet pythons, so
excellent.
With a few other oddballs.
That's good. Now, can you tell us about Constrictors Northwest?
Yeah, just my little personal hobby farm that has snowballed like everyone else's stuff, you know. Started doing the cages and stuff kind of, I don't know, 8 years ago, somewhere in that ballpark. And
cool.
Had to have an outlet to sell them, so. We got her all rolling.
I'm
sorry.
They're definitely very cool. So they're definitely very good cages from what I've seen. And you do breed at the same time, right?
Yes, I do.
Awesome.
So that's where the cages started from, was making them for myself. You know. What one man can do, another can do. I kind of go with that plan with a lot of things. So.
Cool.
Awesome. So now, can you tell us what are some of the highlights of your collection? Like, what are some of the coolest animals you have?
Well, the albinos I just hatched were pretty cool.
Yes, they are.
I was really happy about that. I don't know. I got all kinds of stuff. Caramels, zebra, jags, IJ jags, jungles, IJs.
Okay.
Some granite stuff.
I like your Striped Jungles are pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah, those are some of my favorites.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into some caging talk. Tell us about your caging and your stacks and the whole nine yards. Break it down, please.
Well, basically, they're all they're specifically built for reptiles. It's all marine board, high density polyethylene, plastic. Which is a completely USDA approved and safe plastic for use in the food industry and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
So it's the same kind of plastic that you're drinking your milk out of, basically.
Cool.
We've got the single unit cages. We do all kinds of custom stuff, different sizes, you name it. I probably built it.
Okay.
And then, of course, we've got the pro stacks for breeders and whatnot, and those I've built those, as something for myself, and then obviously I figured other people would want them too, and I was right. So,
cool.
They save energy. It's a more efficient use of space. Just easier to deal with all around. Full-length window design on there, easier to clean. You're not bumping your elbows on cage edges and things like that when you're getting in there and having to scrub off the snake poo that we all love to do, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything to make that easier is always welcome.
Okay.
Exactly. That's the other thing that's nice about the polyethylene is, paint, glue, none of that stuff will actually bond to polyethylene. It's got kind of almost a waxy feel, like a mild waxy feel to it. So that hardened clump of urates in the corner is a lot easier to get out off of polyethylene than other types of plastic or wood, so.
Oh, okay, cool. So, all right, so we're going to purchase a cage for the pythons, or let's use carpet pythons. Like, what are the things that we should be thinking about when we're going to go purchase a cage?
If you're out looking at picking up a baby or something, I think people should get a good idea of what the average adult size is, and then maximum size on top of that, and keep that in mind, as well as heating, how much room they have, they can afford to suck up with cages in their house. The full deal. I mean, you need to plan ahead for it. Obviously, otherwise you're going to end up with a bunch of junk stacked up. As the snake grows, it gets a little bigger cage, It's better just to keep it in a tub or something until it's ready to transfer over to a cage and then live in something a little big for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you also make a cage that's just specifically for carpet pythons, right?
Yeah, it's just kind of a nickname I threw on it because a lot of people buy that size cage for carpet pythons.
And what's the size?
Really, it's better size for smaller carpet pythons. It's like a 3-foot by 2-foot by 14-inch tall cage.
Okay.
And, jungles, IJs, they do great in there, but if you got like a big old female coastal or something, you might want to get something a little bigger.
Okay. Now, what about, do you do racks too?
I do very few racks. I don't even have prices on the site for the racks that I do. I'm really so busy making cages and doing all the custom stuff that I don't have time to bring in more products, So,
okay.
That and the... a lot of the problem with a lot of rack systems is the heating in them. And most people that make rack systems are really using kind of an improper heating, like the bent heat tape
right. Woven
through a rack.
Yeah.
Is asking to burn your house down, basically. And I don't want to be part of that personally, so I'd rather not be in some sort of lawsuit.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of heating, so how do you heat your cages? What do you recommend?
Well, you know, I keep my snakes in a room that's basically heated to tropical. You know, it's like 79, 80 degrees in there most of the year, unless it's breeding season or the middle of summer. I kind of peek out the room and might bring it up to 84, 86 degrees, which makes it so I don't have to cool the snakes as much to get them to breed come fall. But I use heat tape on most things. And then on the arboreal type cages, I use Pro Heat radiant heat panels. Awesome. And if someone's getting a single cage or they have a couple of snakes, you know, and they're not going to have the full blown heated room, I'd say the radiant heat panels are the best way to go.
Okay.
I would say, do you like the heat panels over a lot of other heatings?
Yeah, I think the heat tape's really just going to really work as a hot spot. You know, it's not going to fully heat a cage in a room that people actually are comfortable living in, you know, in the low 70s or whatever. So if you don't have that super warmed up room, I'd go with a radiant heat panel.
Awesome.
It's better heat either way you look at it and safer to boot.
Yeah. I do enjoy it. I have a few heat panels, and I find them much easier to control than the heat tape ones. So I think I'll be making that switch,
it's
too.
It's a little more of a natural heat for the animals as well, so.
Yeah. So.
Right.
That's one of the things that is nice about the ProStack. You can get away with using heat tape in there, and being that the floors and ceilings are actually like a shared, you know, I mean, one cage, the cage above's floor is the cage below's ceiling. The heat will work both as underbelly heat and then radiant heat from above.
Right. I was going to ask you that.
You're cheating a little bit on how much power you're using to make a nice warm area for the snakes.
Yeah, I have a cage that it's stacked on top of a cage that has a heat panel in it, and I don't have to do anything to it because the heat panel from the cage below it warms it up enough that there's a hot spot. So nothing happens. That cage is nothing. So it's definitely, you only got to use like half the heat panel. So definitely understand that.
Yeah, if I have anything stacked above a cage with a radiant heat panel, and I usually put a spacer in there, like an eighth inch spacer of some sort between the actual heat panel and the ceiling. You know, it gives you a little airflow above the heat panel so it doesn't get so hot on the floor above it.
Okay. Now, as far as, are you just your hot spot, what are you keeping your hot spot at? Are you doing like an 88 hot spot?
94, 95.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't run cooler hotspots, but you ever shot the ground with a temp gun on a mildly sunny day? It's a lot hotter than 88 degrees. So.
Right. Yeah, they do that. That's a big thing with keeping lizards. I know is like you know, the hotspot, they're getting like 120 degrees hotspots because. Of that same idea, you know. I think one of the coolest things that I like about your caging and what you do is like that background stuff that you have, and how it, you know, makes it. It's just, that's just such a cool effect. Can you talk about what is that?
Those are backgrounds made by a company called Universal Rocks. Stewart, the owner, used to build zoo exhibits in Australia, and he does some really fantastic work on those. They're actually molded from actual rock faces.
Wow.
You know, they take a mold and then do a casting, and you end up with a background. And he's got a couple different types. One is a polyurea rubber. And I don't want you to think rubber like limp rubber or anything. This is like a car tire almost. It's rigid but flexible enough to bend and get into a cage. So, I mean, he's got some really neat effects on there. He's got actual ground stone dust and sand and natural oxide as the coloring. And that's actually put into the mold before it's cast. So it's embedded in the material itself.
Mm.
So it's not paint or anything like that. The coloring and finish is not going to come off. It's actually in the actual rubber itself.
Awesome.
And there's also a less expensive line of them that are a foam-only line. And they're obviously a little more fragile. The full polyurea rubber line, you could beat that with a baseball bat and it's not going to go anywhere. Where the foam obviously isn't going to have that effect. I mean, if you were to beat it with a baseball bat, you're going to have a big mess.
Right.
Okay. So don't be beating your cages with baseball bats. Right?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yep, not unless it's a really bad day.
And you have replacement caging.
Now,
actually, the polyethylene, you could probably whack this thing with a bat a few times and it'd be fine. It's really high impact plastic. Just don't hit the acrylic window and you're good to go.
That's like you got to do a commercial now where you're like, it's so tough, and you smash it with a baseball bat.
I've done a couple videos beating the crap out of them, basically. They're tough to break.
Awesome.
If they were going to break, FedEx would probably break them when they were shipping to someone's house. So.
Yeah, they're not very gentle with things.
No, they're not. Cages, reptiles, it doesn't really matter. I've seen those guys spinning a box that says perishable on it on their finger like they were a Globetrotter or something. You know, that, give me a break, guy.
Dude, yeah. Please don't do that.
Yeah, you're talking about FedEx. A couple weeks ago when I got that Exanic and the Carnal Head Albino Girl, it was raining that day, and the package shows up, and it's in a plastic bag.
Oh my God.
No. So I'm thinking, no, did this travel the whole time in a plastic bag?
Oh, there goes those animals.
I'm like, oh, my God. It says on there live animals, and they got it in a plastic bag. But anyway.
Listen, we learned your
well, they're not all using
stupid.
Their heads.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Now, with your Cajun, do you approach with a more naturalistic setup, or do you go with simplicity for you personally?
Mostly the simple setups. You know, I've got a couple of kind of display cages in the room just to mix it up so it's not so monotonous looking with sterile looking cages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, a sterile, simple cage is really easy to clean, and the other ones maybe not so easy, but but they look really nice. And, you know, it's nice to have something I can actually have the snake just sitting in the cage, pop the window open, and I don't need any additional lighting or to take it out and mess with it, and I can get a natural picture of it.
Awesome.
Yeah, you can
take
a nice picture.
If I
want to
go post something on the... Well, I try.
I, on the other hand, have to definitely work on that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think I could do better on my own pictures personally. I don't know if digital cameras degrade over time, but my pictures seem to be getting worse and worse as as time goes on instead of better. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's just me. Who knows?
I've been walking through department stores. I'm like, oh, cameras are getting cheaper. Does that mean that they're crappier now, or like, am I missing some new brand? I don't know.
I think that's it. I think they're just putting cheaper guts in the cameras, basically.
Yeah, I'm like, am I going to buy this, take one picture, and then watch it explode in my hand? I mean, So I don't know. I'm not good at the – same deal. I'm not very good at the picture taking. Every once in a while, I'll just take one and be like, oh, yeah, this thing was here a couple months ago. Still around. I mean, it looks pretty, but yeah, I need to get better picture taking. So.
Yeah, I think I need a new camera, but my problem is I always blow the money on snakes instead of a new camera, so – what are you going to do?
Snakes are more important than the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you did hatch, well, you told us you hatched in the albinos this past week. Can you tell us about that? And apparently you had one that was striped. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, that was fun. I I was waiting the whole, well, I was waiting for weeks and weeks, actually, but it's come down to the last stretch there. I cut the eggs early, and before that I was, candling them and all that kind of stuff, trying to see what's what. And I actually slit the eggs a little early, and then I was kind of sweating it, because they were about 5 days early before they actually came out. But, you know, I got that did I get albinos thing out of my head anyways, so.
Right.
I got 100% hatch rate, so I'm about as happy as could be about that.
Awesome.
And the stripe thing, the male that I had was a 66% possible het that was striped. I picked up from Tom Keoghan with another IJ Jag Poss het albino.
Mm-hmm.
And it really wasn't, I thought, oh, cool, there's a stripe, you know, whatever. And I was kind of surprised to see that about half the litter's got stripes on it, so.
Nice.
A little bonus that I'm not complaining about at all.
No, good bonuses. So just, they're going to take a little bit of time to start getting their color in there.
I took some pre-shed pics, and that's kind of like looking through a dirty window at them, basically, with that skin and baby goo all over them, you know, on the skin and everything, so.
Yeah. The post shed pics will be the better one. The ones where I actually can see distinctive stuff. Yeah, that'll be nice. Now, can you tell us about your Triple J clutch? Was there anything special out of that? And because it was never really done, it's
I think Anthony Caponetto bred some IJ Jag jungles that I found out about halfway through incubation, but...
Okay. So, now, it is an IJ Jag cross with the jungle?
Yeah, I bred a 75% IJ Jag that's possibly het granite to a nice jungle female that's produced some really nice jungle babies for me in the past.
Awesome.
And, I was kind of shooting for more color, you know, more yellows, more reds, and see what would happen. And they look pretty good, so I'm not complaining there again.
Okay.
I've been working on getting them all the feed and all that good stuff.
Awesome. In comparison to some other baby IJs and jungles you've seen, how's the color look on these guys so far? I know they're just hatchling.
Pretty good. I mean, they just shed, and, I just got a couple of them feeding so far, so they still look like... Actually, I was kind of surprised. The whole clutch came out red, which was surprising to me, being that the female was a jungle, and, you know, her previous babies, they start out black and gray pretty much.
Interesting.
But I got all red babies with a male 75% IJ Jag as the father of the litter, or clutch. Which was surprising to me, you know.
Hmm. Wasn't expecting red, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a little different, but we'll see what happens as they get a little size to them.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what their color progress would be. You worked with granites, and I'm just kind of I'm going to get my feet wet with granites this year. How are they as a morph to deal with, as well as just because I've heard some things about them.
Well, I really don't have any straight-up granites. I'm still working. I got a clutch of possible granites cooking right now that it's due to hatch at the end of the month.
Awesome.
But other than that, I've just been working with some hats and poss hats here.
Okay. For what I've been told, that the granites and het granites and things like that are more susceptible to RI than other species and other morphs. not sure what if that's just, you know, what people have been noticing or if this is an actual kind of been happening to a lot of people.
Well, I've heard they're a little weaker myself as well. And I think the big thing on that is, you know, it's a recessive trait. So from the get-go, people were just shooting to make them.
Yeah.
Not thinking about the fact that inbreeding does affect reptiles, you know, I mean, in a bad way at some point.
Right.
I mean, you just keep inbreeding. You're just polishing the shine right off of a shiny new car there and taking it to a different place.
Yeah.
So I think when people start outcrossing granites more, you know, it doesn't have to be a mix or something, just breeding it to some random different IJs or whatever other morphs they want to inject that into, you're going to get a better quality animal.
You get stronger IJ.
Health-wise.
Yeah,
awesome.
And I think the proof to that is that talking to Nick and Paul, that all the outcross, like the granite jags and the zebra granites and all those type of things, they're all much better than the pure granites.
Mm.
So I think it has to just be outcrossed. But imagine a PCIJ bloodline with a granite. I mean, that's just going to be nuts.
It's going to be interesting.
It's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
So, talking about granite, what do you think about mixing the caramel in with the granite? I know that's something that I'm shooting for, and I know that's something that you had talked about before. What do you think that's going to – what's your thoughts on that?
Well, with the way that caramel reduces black pigment and all the little black speckles on there, I have no idea what will actually happen. I've got some speculation and ideas about it, and I think it'll probably be pretty interesting looking either way you look at it. I'm thinking somewhere along the lines of the carpet version of like a hypo leopard boa constrictor where you get some really crazy stuff happening. And even when a granite has a lot of pattern, once that black pigment is reduced, you know, it could look all different kinds of ways. So.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited about that one. What about?
I think they're going to be interesting looking snakes either way you look at it.
Yeah.
And I could be completely wrong on all that, but
they could be hideous. Yeah.
we'll have to see, won't we?
That's what makes it fun, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, shooting for the unknown.
Yeah. Can you tell us about your Tava IJ project?
Yeah, it's basically it's a little oddball male that was hatched out in a clutch of, I think it was 26. And he looks different from all the siblings. It's got light eyes, got a reduced face pattern, a clean yellow belly, and then that yellow belly kind of comes up the sides and looks like someone took an eraser down the side and like erased the markings where they should come down to the belly. They stop
right.
A little lower than the midline on the side. So, you know, I could be wrong. It may pan out to just be a weird looking IJ, but with all those things combined, I'm guessing it's a new morph, you know. Maybe I'll be disappointed and it won't happen, but, you know, it was definitely worth holding on to, so that's what I'm doing.
Cool. Mm. Best of luck with that. Do you think that I often wonder if, like, because carpet pythons are so variable when they hatch out, do you think that sometimes we overlook what could be potential morphs? I think sometimes
definitely.
We miss things, you know?
I think we need to, you know, at least take a look at what's happening in the world of ball pythons. I mean, there's so many ball python morphs. I could be looking at a morph and probably not even tell it's a morph.
Yeah.
There's lots of them that I've seen and seen all kinds of different names stamped on them. I'm like, it looks like a normal to me, but
yeah.
Apparently that's wrong, so...
Sometimes I think, though, that those, you know, when you, if you want to step into the world of ball python, sometimes, like, the what they label as a morph, and maybe it's a little bit different or a little bit, you know, a different pattern or something like that. And then you look at what it does when it's bred back. It's almost like it's a like a visual het. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at what the
exactly
would be, then all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, wow, that's pretty cool. And I think that sometimes, like, the carpet python people, like, they skip over thinking about that thing. And I thought it was good. Like, this IJ project that you have, I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, you notice something different and you're, you know, you're trying to take it to the next level. And who knows what could pop out. So,
well, he's just about ready to go. I think he's going to, hopefully, with any luck, he'll breed this coming season, and we'll see what happens.
Cool.
But, you know, like on all the co-dominant or incomplete dominant morphs, most pattern traits are usually some sort of incomplete dominant trait, if you look at just snakes in general or animals in general, for that matter. And, you know, basically that's what they are, is a visual het, you know.
Right.
So, those guys on the ball pythons have been digging through piles of imports and cherry picking out the little differences and
mm-hmm.
coming up with good stuff. You know, it pans out to be something unique and different when they breed them together. And, you know, you got to start somewhere. Mutations all happen for some reason, and if you're not looking for them,
yeah,
someone else
right
is going to come up with it.
Right. Awesome.
Well, there's always always something different out there, and as far as random mutations go, you know, they happen one at a time. You know, if you're going to have a random mutant happen, it's just going to be a single mutation, and then if you don't catch it, it goes on, you know.
Yeah, and if selling it as a pet or something. Now,
I've seen it happen. I've seen guys in the boa world anyway. There's a guy on Reptile Insider, Ken, who bred a couple of rescue boas together and produced a new morph called the Sterling, which is a patternless boa.
Wow.
And I was thinking, what do you think the folks that let those go as a couple rescues are feeling right now, you know?
Oh, God.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, that would be, oh, sweet God, no.
Yep.
God.
Someone's kicking themselves.
Yeah, repeatedly. I mean, dude, I have seller's remorse, and I just, you know, I haven't produced anything major. And, like, you know, having somebody produce something brand new out of things you just basically gave away.
Mm-hmm.
God. Oh, that's...
Well, speaking of seller's remorse, that's exactly why I don't try and sell anything off too early. Never hurts to hold on to things for a while, because I've done it over and over the years. You know, someone sells someone a baby, and I'm like, yeah, it's a nice looking snake. And then 3 months later, they post a picture of it on a forum somewhere, and I'm thinking, oh, God. I should have kept that one.
You're talking about random mutations, and I bought a snake from Jason Balin back in 2009. And it was from his Tiger Jag Sib to Tiger Jag Sib pairing. And there was something about this snake that just looked different than the – because I bought a couple from the clutch. And this one just looked different. And you saw that one, though. And you know the one that kind of looks like a Gamma Jag?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I think that there's something to that one that's definitely different. That, you know, I think that's going to prove out to be, well, hopefully it does, you know, I don't know. But it definitely doesn't look like a coastal, that's for sure. I mean, if I put that
cool
next to my Gamma Jag, it's like, wow, you know. But I know he's having seller's remorse on that one for sure.
Yeah, well, seller's remorse sucks sometimes.
Happens to everybody.
Buyer's remorse, you get over it because then the snake comes, you're like, ooh, okay, that's why I bought it. But, you know, seller's remorse, it's pain. Anyway, I digress. Ed, what are your thoughts of the carpet market, and where do you see it going in the future? Kind of at the pulse of this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, I think it's still kind of in its infancy, really. I mean, it's all the morphs are out there now, and people are starting to make designers and stuff like that. To me, it's like rolling the clock back to the 90s on boa constrictors.
Do you see
a lot of different ways to go with it, and you know, one hand is going to help wash the other as far as morphs and localities go.
Yeah.
With the boa market, do you see a lot of parallels with the boa and the carpet python market?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I mean, I come from a background of breeding boa constrictors for, you know, 18 years or whatever. And, you know, I mean, the morphs are the same things in a carpet python form pretty much. So,
yeah.
I think we need to be careful with what we do and sell stuff to you know, try and select who you sell to. Just isn't going to just blow things out and kill the market, because that doesn't help anybody, does it?
No, absolutely not. So, what do you think about with all the new morphs coming out and everything? What do you think that the, you know, the whole mutt carpet, you know, selling them as pet grade quality carpets, or do we cull them, or what's your thoughts on all that?
Well, I think people should do whatever they feel is the right thing to do on it. Either way, you know, I don't see any problem with either of them. You know, we feed rats to snakes, so one animal feeds another. You know, myself, you know, I've got a handful of mutt carpets in there, a byproduct of making other things, and I just take them to a show and sell them off as a newbie snake, basically. It's people got to start somewhere. And, you know, if someone gets an animal that didn't cost them an arm and a leg and they enjoy it, great.
Right.
You know, we stop someone else from getting into ball pythons.
That's awesome. But yeah, I never thought of. I read the post over there, and they were talking about that, and I think you posted on it. But I never thought about that whole, like, the pet grade type of carpet python, and that was a different approach that I never thought of. Thought it was kind of a good thing, but the only thing you have to worry about that is you can't really control what happens, you know, if they're breeding and whatnot. But to a certain extent,
you can't really control that either way you look at it. There's no control over that. And even if people have quote unquote pure animals, one could be sold from one guy to the next, and they lose that information on what it is, and maybe it's a jungle and it looks like a coastal or whatever. People just assume and then go ahead and do it. You know, at some point someone's going to mix things up, and it's probably already happened plenty of times.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yep.
I don't really know how pure any captive type really is, you know.
Yeah,
as far as that goes, how pure is any wild type, you know? There's no fence or border between the different areas that the different carpets are in. And
right.
If
and now
see a female carpet, if a male carpet sees a female carpet and it's time to breed, I don't think he's going to ask her where she comes from or what species she is. It's going to be go time, and they're going to have a good time.
Yep.
Yeah. And now, even now with, you know, when the book came out, The Complete Carpet Python, you know, Nick talked about how basically a jungle and a coastal, there's not a difference between them anyway, so.
Yeah.
Owen
other
read
than
that.
By more people. Locality.
Yeah, other than just being a locality, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's just interesting. So, I guess the cool things for us to ask that as we come towards the end is, you know, if you could have any carpet in your collection, what would it be? Don't worry about price. Don't worry about anything. What would it be? Anything?
It'd probably be something that doesn't exist yet that I'm shooting to make down the road, which would be like Sunglow Stripe Super Red Intensified on something, you know.
Oh, my God. You won't.
Know, for it.
Yeah. If you go past four things, you lose Owen. He can't keep
it. Yeah, I'm done. God damn, will you guys just make up new names? Like, you know, Ball Python could have sat there and been like, it's a ghost, yada, yada, yada. They just call it like a bumblebee. I mean, come on now. Can't we just make up new names?
I don't really care for the whole renaming everything. At least with all the different names on there, I know what it is, you know.
Know what goes into it, right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you could have any other type of Morelia, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of them. I like the green trees. I wouldn't mind if I had more room anyway, sticking up like a barnack or something. Possibly some blackheads. So there's a lot of them. I could just carry on with a list. Bolins, you know, so... I'm a snake geek like everybody else, so...
Sure.
The only thing that stopped me from getting more of them is space and time to clean up all the crap and feed them.
I didn't worry about those things yet.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah.
It's really one of those things we talk about that you should look into.
Well, the nice thing... about making cages is I can get creative in a little space I have left over, you know.
Yeah, you make
and
cages,
build
you whatever you
custom
want.
Custom stuff to fit into that little nook or whatever, but
yeah.
At some point you run out of little nooks to cram another cage in, and in order to get another one, you got to sell one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can't keep them
yet.
All.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. So what are some of your exciting projects for 2013?
Oh, I don't know if I really thought that far ahead yet. I'd really like to see that Tava Morph prove out, obviously. Other than that, most of it will probably be a repeat of this year. I'm really looking forward to these... IJ, well, they're IJ Jag Caramels. Caramel IJ Jags, there we go.
There we go. Cool.
So I think that's going to really intensify the red and the caramel with the IJ injected in there. And hoping to, down the road, make something that... looks like a super, you know, I mean, if I get something that looks like a super in the first generation and it isn't a super, how much better will the super look, you know?
Yeah.
Super caramel, not super jag.
I like super
don't
caramel.
Want to make any of those.
Waste of an egg, please.
Okay. I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to hit on before we jump off. But what's your website info, and how do we get in touch with you?
It's constrictorsnw.com. I got contact pages on there with all my email, phone number, and the whole deal on there. Talk to people about snakes and cages about every day, so that's what I'm into. That's what I do, and I don't ever get tired of doing it. So.
Okay.
Excellent.
Sorry,
my connection got messed up for a second there. I kept having trouble throughout the show hearing this. For some reason, whenever I use, I don't know, it gets messed up. But anyway, Is there anything else that you wanted to hit on, Ed? Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think I'm good there. I don't know, unless you guys want to hear me yap more about caging.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything else you want to, you know, wanted to hit on, that feel free.
How about plastic types on caging?
Yeah, go ahead.
Types of plastic. You know, a lot of people take cages made out of PVC. And I don't know if anyone's really looked into the types of plastic that they're putting their reptiles in, but that's
mm-hmm.
not a good type of plastic to be dealing with.
Really?
As far as I'm concerned, it's the equivalent of something like asbestos or lead paint or any of that, you know.
God.
Most governments and different affiliations are trying to actually get rid of PVC as being used for a lot of different products because it off-gasses fumes and whatnot, as well as several other types of plastic. I could carry on for quite a while on that whole thing, but, you know, if people are getting a reptile cage, they should look into whatever that cage is made out of. I can't make cages for everybody. But if you're going to buy something, get something that isn't poisonous to your snake.
Huh. I never heard that.
You heat some of these plastics up like PVC. Go into Home Depot or somewhere. Look at a PVC pipe. There's a blue or a purple stamp on it that basically is warning you this is leaching toxins at temperatures over 75 degrees. And what temperatures do we keep tropical snakes at? Over 75 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, you get a new car, that new car smell is plastic off-gassing. Everybody loves that stuff, that new car smell. But really you're breathing in vapors from plastics and chemicals, you know. And after that new car smell goes away, it'll come back. On hot days, you crack the door open, get in there, it smells all fresh and new again. New car smells back. It's from the heated plastic.
Mm.
So, something to think about. A lot of guys use those burnt PVC perches.
Yeah.
I've used some of them for display and stuff. Those are bad, too. Don't use burnt PVC. Be better off putting wood perches in the cage over burnt PVC.
Okay. Huh. Didn't know that. Now I'm trying to think if I have any. What about melamine? I heard that was bad too. Is that true or?
Well, melamine is basically wood particles that are put together with the glue, which is you know, probably not good.
Right.
I'm sure it's not as bad as PVC is. There's some possibilities of off-gassing with whatever glues they're using in those. I mean, different companies use different types of glues to put that stuff together. Biggest problem with melamine on caging is it isn't really built to be water-resistant in any way.
Right.
It's got a neat finish on it that lasts for a couple of weeks until some water gets on there, and it's going to swell up, and you're just going to start yourself a... bacteria garden.
Now,
on top of the heavy factor of it.
What about, here's something for you as far as caging. What do you find is better when working with pythons as far as two windows, one window for opening the cages? Do you have a preference?
I like the single windows unless it's something big and really nasty tempered. Then a double window is good just for the shield factor, you know, of one window being closed.
Right.
The cages that I do right now, the design of the cage has most of them are a single window, and mm-hmm. the single window actually helps support the cage itself because it's bolted, it butts down to the litter dam, and then the hinges bolt the window and litter dam together, so that window itself works like a floating beam so you don't get sagging issues.
Okay.
And then a lot of the guys will put like a 2-inch header over the door of the cage, which makes everything look nice and even, but they're not really following rules of structure. I mean, if you've got a 4-foot span, you need to have enough header over that open door to support it. You know, just like framing in a window on a house or a door or anything else, there's got to be support over that opening in the wall. Otherwise, right. you're going to have sagging problems, and that's a big problem with plastic cages. Plastic is not the same as wood, obviously, in that most plastics are solid, and there's nothing to stop them from sagging. The type of plastic that I use now is a high-density polyethylene marine board. It's an engineered plastic. It's got it's kind of like plywood, but in plastic form.
Nice.
A solid outer on both sides, and then the inside has got an elongated bubble, which I have no idea how they do that, but that elongated bubble inside gives it kind of almost a wood grain, you know,
right.
on the inner core of it, so I can take a little thin piece of it and hold it up, and it's not bowing.
Hmm.
Whereas solid cord plastics have what they call cold flow.
Mm.
The plastic can just kind of mold around whatever it's sitting on. So if you've got it sitting on something that's unlevel, it's just going to make it fall apart that much quicker or sag or whatever.
Right. Now, I've had thin plastic cage melt on me once when it got too close to the heat or just from being on top of, I think it was on top of some blocks when the heat was on the block and was the heat and not really being all completely covered on the bottom just kind of made it melt. Not a good thing for a cage, right?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
You know, plastic is not steel. You got to keep your heat sources within reason on plastic, either way you look at it, a radiant heat panel, heat tape. Most of the time you're going to be fine with that, but if you're keeping a monitor or something like that where it needs really, really high temperatures, keep those bulbs and things away from plastic.
Wow.
You need a buffer zone between too high of a heat and plastic, either way you look at it.
Got it. Awesome. Well, keep that one in mind.
Okay. So, what else? Anything else that we cage-wise? How hard are they to put together?
As far as me building them or someone assembling them after they've been built?
No, somebody assembling after they've been built.
These are relatively easy. They're all put together with all my joints on the cages. They ship flat, you know. It's all broken down for shipping.
Okay.
And they have what's called a sliding dovetail joints on most of the cage. So the panels, you can literally put a single cage together without actually picking up a screwdriver or having a screw. It'll all hold together on its own. The screws basically are just to lock all the parts in place.
Awesome.
Typically on a 4-foot cage, you got about 10 screws, and that the rest of it's held together by the joints and the type of joinery that it's made with. Saves you from having 10,000 holes to fill with screws. You got to figure every hole you have in there that's got a screw going through it is another point where you could possibly have a leak down the road, so less is better.
Right.
And this type of joinery has been used in cabinetry for forever and a day. you know, no one really put it to use in plastic, and it seemed like the way to go to me. If I'm going to have to assemble something, you know, I don't want a sack of screws that's going to be all over the house while I'm doing it, or have to have people hold parts up. You can assemble it yourself in between 2 and 5 minutes on a single unit cage.
Oh,
not including sealing it and that kind of stuff. You'll have the actual structure put together, and it'll look like it's going to look when you've got it completed within a few minutes.
Okay. And you seal it up, and
yeah. As far as sealing the, you know, we just use caulking. I don't actually ship caulking out. I've had a few incidents. I did ship caulking out with the cages, and of course FedEx. Smash the tube of caulking between some cage panels, and luckily it's water cleaner, but still a whole tube of caulking smashed between a couple of panels is a mess to clean up. So, you know, you can pick up caulking for like $3 at any hardware store. And the big thing on polyethylene, like I said before, nothing will physically bond to it. You know, it either has to be mechanically fastened together or welded. And caulking is not going to stick to it any better. So on my instruction page on the site there, I can't stress enough, a little goes a long way. And being a water-based acrylic siliconized caulking, you put a little bead in there and wipe it out with a wet cloth. You really want to try and get it out of there, and the action of doing that is basically going to push the tiny amount you need into the, you know, less than paper thin seam and work as a gasket for you. So down the road, if you do want to take the cage apart, you still can, and then the caulking will basically just peel off like a sticker off of wax paper.
Huh. That's pretty cool. What about like a turnaround time? What do you usually look about?
This time of year, I'm probably 7-8 weeks out.
Okay.
We got a ton of orders, and I can only make them so fast and keep the quality standard where it needs to be. So, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, you know, I do what I can here, but I don't want to sacrifice things to make things happen faster, so.
Right. You do it all yourself?
Presently, I'm doing it myself. Yeah, I just had to let a guy go out here. It's a real pain trying to hire people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, nobody has plastic fabrication experience, and so I end up having to train guys. And that sucks. Just no two ways about it.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a lot more work than just doing it yourself. A lot of the time, people aren't as interested in turning out a quality product when it's not their product that they're making, you know. So I got to go around chasing mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And might be a little bit of a perfectionist, but... I don't like sending out crap. It's not my thing.
Right.
So if it's not right, it's junk. There's two ways to have it done. Right way and the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
keeps me busy for sure.
You can pretty much custom anything that people would want?
Yeah, most anything you can imagine. I can make it out of plastic. You know, I've worked with about every type of plastic you could possibly imagine. So I make all kinds of stuff. Some of the ideas I turn into actual models and put them up on the site as a standardized, you know, model once I've made them and written down all the measurements and size. And some of them I don't, you know, a couple of them are strange strange things people want me to make for them, and I make those too. So if it fits what works for them, I'll make it for them.
Right.
But without being able to talk to everybody and say, what in the world is this for? You know, some of them seem a little odd to me.
Right. Well, that's cool.
Of course,
I mean,
I don't know what they're keeping. They could be keeping a monkey or something in it for all I know.
Wow.
Of course, there's limitations
the one...
on shipping sizes and things like that. So, you know, if you don't want to pay a fortune for it, it needs to be something in the ballpark of 4 foot by 30 by 30 is about as big as it can be without having to ship it freight.
Okay.
Freight
is expensive. Stacks, the pro stacks, do they come freight or do they come in FedEx?
They ship out FedEx. They just come in multiple packages.
Oh, okay.
So my FedEx driver out here comes out here last part of the day on the last stop on his route. He does that because he knows I got a stacks and stacks of heavy stuff for him to lift up here, and I help him out anyway, so he's a pretty good guy.
Oh, that's cool. Cool.
Usually if they have a sub driver come out there, out here, he's not going to be happy.
He's cursed.
But, you know, they'll pull into the driveway and they got the truck pulled in forward. They're like, no, we need to pull out and back that thing right up to the door here, buddy. We got a lot of stuff we're going to load.
Oh, wow.
And they kind of look at me like, oh, crap.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Man. Okay. I think what else?
You guys were talking about getting your rooms arranged and all that kind of stuff with the same types of caging actually look like they belong in the room together.
Yes,
yep.
I'd kill for that. I'm all over
the still
place.
Working on that myself, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of years back I made a different style of cages, so I still have a few of those I'm working on replacing with the Pro Stacks. All I use is the Pro Stacks in there. Well, that's what I'm working on, trying to use nothing but the Pro Stacks. So
yeah, that's the kind.
It's hard
like
for me to make stuff for myself when I got other orders that people want, you know, yesterday.
Yeah, that must suck though. I mean,
yeah.
It's a little annoying sometimes, and I'm thinking, yeah, this stack would be perfect. Perfect in this corner over here, you know, and then I got to take it apart, box it up, and ship it out.
That's like bringing your eggs of crazy morphs over to somebody else's incubator and then watch them hatch out and take them home.
Yeah,
that's for the person who watched them hatch out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's fun to make some of the really nice cages. I mean, some people have got some really nice elaborate setups done with backgrounds and the whole deal. I've done, you know, full panoramic sides and backs and the full works and all that kind of stuff. And downside is take a couple pictures of it, and I may or may not put them up. And depending on if they turn out, it's really hard to take pictures of black cages. The window on the front with the black inside has a mirror effect, you know, so taking photographs of that is horribly difficult.
Right.
But I get to look at them for a little while anyways before I take them apart, so. Those ones,
what do you find as far as color-wise, what do you find is the better option? I mean, I know some people use black because it says it makes the reptile feel more secure. And what do you use, black?
I use white.
White?
I have all white caging. It's easy to see what's going on. It's easy to see if there's a dirty spot in there I need to clean.
Right.
I don't have to use extra lighting. I'm a bit of a power miser. You know, so the natural sunlight coming through the window and the room's light that's on is plenty of light to light up the whole thing, and all the cages have plenty of light in their cage. All the snakes have plenty of light in their cages.
Okay.
You know, the whole snakes are more comfortable in the black cage. I can't say whether that's true or not. I haven't done a full study on anything like that, but I don't have any problems. The snakes all seem fine. They're comfortable to hang out on their perches right out in the open, and I've had plenty of success breeding. So,
do you find the white cages,
the white ones,
are clean? Like, I heard white cages.
What's that? I couldn't hear you again there.
Sorry. I heard that white cages can sometimes stain, kind of get like a yellowish kind of color. Do you find them kind of hard to keep clean?
Well, the only reason a white cage would turn yellow would be if the plastic wasn't a UV stabilized plastic.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff I use is all UV stable. If you were to buy a cage that was white and it was made out of ABS or something, that wasn't UV stabilized, you can still get ABS that is UV stabilized, but if it isn't, it'll turn yellow like the old original Neo Deschet or whatever those are called.
Right.
Those kind of look, you know, like someone smoked 1,000 cigarettes next to the cage and it all got tobacco stained, you know. I'm like, what the hell? But, now, the polyethylene that I use here is all UV stable, so it's going to be the same color it is when you get it forever.
Awesome.
And then as far as staining and things like that, I get everything from, rat blood. I feed frozen thaw, but still, you know, you thaw those things out, and they got blood coming out of their nose and stuff, and the snakes latch onto them and rub them on the wall and all that. It won't absorb that, and you can just wipe it off. You know, it may take a little elbow grease, but it will not stain into the plastic.
Excellent.
A worst-case scenario, get one of those Mr. Clean magic erasers. It'll wipe rat blood and everything else right off.
Nice.
Permanent marker, it'll come right off, too.
Wow.
Not to say, not telling anyone to go draw all over their cage with permanent marker and expect to get it all off real easily, but it will come off.
What about ventilation? Do you have it set to what, how your cages are set up, or can you change that? Or?
Well, the standard ventilation that I have on the cages, I've got them set up to where the face pretty much seals up. I mean, it's not airtight, but there's a slotted vent both in the upper left and rear corners on most cages. So, I mean, you're going to have a hot side and a cool side, and they don't look really big. They're up in the top corners, so they're kind of hard to see if you're looking at pictures. It's basically 2.5 inches long by 3/16 of an inch wide, slotted vent on both the left and right side. And with your heat on one side, heated air just through convection is going to want to escape, you know, it's drawn towards cooler air, so it's going to want to escape out that vent, you know, and the vent isn't big enough to where it's all going to escape, but a little bit will, and just that action in itself is automatically going to draw in cool air on the cool side, you know, and it moves it through in a cycle. That's slow enough that it's not wicking all your humidity away, and that's why the vents are the size that they are and where they're placed. You get too much ventilation on there, you're basically creating a convection oven there. It's going to be very dry. You're going to have stuck sheds and all kinds of problems.
Right.
Only cages I don't make with the vents up there in the upper left and right corners is the arboreal cages. I've changed that to mid vents on the left and right side, about mid wall, same type of slotted vents. But the guys with the arboreal stuff are trying to create that heat pocket up top. So we modified it for that purpose.
Okay.
And those have a split back that has a lap joint in the center and slotted vents on there.
So that
you still get
more
the same.
Towards...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. That would be more towards like your Condors and stuff like that, something
exactly.
Along those lines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those guys are trying to achieve a heat pocket so the snakes can, you know, thermoregulate by going up or down on the different perches and whatnot. And then with the left and right ventilation, if you've got your heat on one side, you still, the cage works basically like an air pump, a very slow-moving air pump, albeit, but it's pumping some heated air out and drawing in fresh air, and you've got a nice cycle of air going through there so it's not stale.
Right.
If air gets stale, you've got stale air in your cage, you'll know it when you pop the door open. If there's not a turd in there, it's still going to smell funny. So.
Okay.
I've been doing this for 8+ years, so there's a lot of little bits and pieces and details in there that may seem insignificant, but. You know, I'm thinking about what I'm doing here, and if I come up with something better that's better for the animals, I add it to the cages.
Awesome.
Cool. That's what makes me. I want to make sure before I go and buy caging that I'm buying caging that I've thought about all the little, exactly what you're saying, like the details, and thought it through, you know, to make the animal happy and make it. Easy to clean and easy to maintain.
Yeah, it's more than just a box with a window on the front of it. I know a lot of cages all look like a box with a window on the front of it, and some of them might be that. Not to dog on the other guys that make cages. Some of them make some quality stuff, you know. But, I've been doing it for a while, and I've put some serious thought into it, and, you know, I keep plenty of snakes here, so I've got a lot of time working in the actual cages myself, so.
Right.
Right.
Here's a guy that, you know, and I think, you know, I think what draws me to your cage is as being you're a carpet python breeder, so, I mean, you know, you're using your cages to breed carpet pythons, so it only makes sense that if I keep carpet pythons that I probably have success using your cagings. So.
Well, as long as you, you know, follow the steps of normal carpet python keeping, should go off without too many hitches.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care who you are. If you're not doing something right, things probably aren't going to go right for you. But
right.
there are some guidelines that you have to follow. Either way you look
awesome.
At it.
True.
Very cool. You got anything else, Bill?
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm going to have to start doing measurements for cages now so I can send them to Ed.
Well, let me know when you're ready, man. We'll set you up.
Cool. I'll look into that. No, I guess I'm done. Thanks a lot for coming on, Ed, and talking with us cages. I mean, the break from our usual Morelia and other types of python, but something I think people overlook. They buy the snake, and usually the first thing they say to me after they buy it is, oh, yeah, what were you keeping it in? Like, oh, God. So definitely very good to have start telling them to go to you, Ed, and like, tell him what you have, and then he'll tell you what to get. So.
Well, I do that kind of stuff all the time, so.
Awesome.
I know how to keep animals I don't even keep here just because I've had to figure it out, you know, because people are going to ask me those questions, so.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on here, and hope people can decipher something good out of my rambling on the show here.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
I'm more concerned. I'm going to go sit and check all my PVC cages.
Yeah, you know, people don't have to believe me word for word on that kind of stuff, but punch in the words PVC and bad on any search engine, and you'll have hours and hours of reading.
Jeez.
For that matter, look up any type of plastic that any cage company. Like I said, I'm not under the assumption everyone's going to come buy cages from me, and that's fine. I can't make everybody's cages. But if you're going to get some cages, you know, reptiles and amphibians are indicator species in any habitat. They're the first ones to be affected by pollution and different things like that. Check out what you're getting into. Just search for it. There's lots of info out there.
Awesome.
Huh. Very cool. Ed, give us your website one more time before you jump off.
It's constrictorsnw.com.
Very good.
Awesome. So
if you're in the market for some caging,
yep,
check it out.
Awesome. I just want to start trying to see if you can bug Ed for pictures of those baby albinos. So.
I'll work on that. As soon as they shed out, you can bet I'll have some pictures up.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Ed, for coming on and talking with us. And you have a good night, all right?
All right. You too.
Thanks,
all right,
Ed.
See you, Ed.
Bye-bye.
Very cool.
Something you and I have talked about. Every time you go into somebody's place, it's always, you know, what kind of caging do you have? What do you use? So it's nice to actually talk to a guy who builds the cages to tell him, you know, this is what you guys could do, this is what you guys should do. Stay the hell away from this. And, of course, he's like, stay away from PVC. I'm like, crap. Stay away from melamine. Oh, shit. So it's like, okay, all right, I got it. Got to be redone. Okay. So,
yeah.
I'll work on that.
Yeah, that's definitely I think you're right, though, that people often overlook that aspect of reptile keeping and don't think about that as much as probably they should. And, it's kind of an important thing, so. So,
anyway.
I definitely will be contacting Ed sometime in the near future and hooking my room up, even if I do it slowly over time. But because right now it's just a mixed up mess.
Yeah, me
the
too.
Stuff that I built, you know. So.
I don't think I have a single cage that is like the other ones, and so.
Yeah. All right. So as we head off here and say goodnight to everybody, a couple things that I wanted to hit on. If you are still looking for a Carpet Fest t-shirt, I still have them available. If you want one, just send me an email at moreliapythonradio@gmail.com, and I will hook you up with that. Check out Morelia Python Forum. There's a great community over there, and a lot of cool things are starting to hatch out. And, you know, I noticed that more and more people are coming on board there, so that's a cool thing. Another cool group that I saw was this is on Facebook, and it's called Australian Reptile Mutation Discussion Group.
Yeah, I don't know how I got involved in that, but I keep getting updates for it. I think I should probably blame you for that, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I put you on there. I figured if you were ever going to talk about it on the show, you should be on there. I didn't add anybody else because the last time I did that was a disaster.
No, I'm looking at it. I'm like, who the hell added? Why am I? All right, cool. All right, I'm reading this. All right. So,
I always look at it as pretty cool because I don't even know their names. I just know them by their website. It's carpetpythons.com.au. But they're the ones with that tribal carpet, and they got all this really cool, I don't know what the hell is in their carpet pythons, but they're awesome. Some really interesting stuff going on there. But they're the ones that started up that group, and I'm pretty sure they're a biology teacher, and they're really getting into genetics. And some of you would probably like it because of some of the Antaresia stuff that some of the guy was, I can't remember who it was, but they were posting up all the different morphs and T-positive albinos and just some really, really cool stuff. So,
awesome.
So you should check that out on Facebook, and of course check out Moravian Python Radio on Facebook. Sign up for Moravian Python Pick of the Week.
Awesome.
And next week we have Brian Barczyk from Snakebite TV.
Awesome.
We're going to be talking about the, you know, it's everybody's probably, well, I say it's my dream, and I know it's probably your dream too, Owen, to do this for a living and basically breed snakes for a living, and hopefully we get a little insight into that next week. So
that'd be nice. I need a building.
Yeah, one in it.
Awesome.
That's all I. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you about. Did you see that Macaw's place on the Moravian Python forum?
Yes.
That crazy looking one?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want it.
I thought you might.
Yeah, I want it. The Macs are swiftly growing on me, and now it's like, you know, oh my God, I should get more of these. And it's like, no. We have to have calm down. Whoa now. We don't need more Macs, because the boy I have that you gave me, yeah, I love him to death. He's the coolest thing. Female is the worst monster on the face of the planet, and she just wants me dead. So we'll hold off on Macs for a little bit, but I did see that one, and I definitely thought it was cool.
Yeah, that's definitely a cool thing. But that's all I got. What do you got, Owen?
I got, if you want to get in contact with me, you can go on Facebook to Rogue-Reptiles. You can like us and check it out. We're getting close to hatching dates, so I'm telling you, it's going to start getting cool on the Facebook page. The first thing coming up is the Carmel Tigers will be here June 5th. So
nice.
I'm excited for that. And if you don't think I have a calendar with hash marks and a circle around June 5th, you're batshit crazy. So
that's
can't
what I'm
going
to have
them.
To come over and see personally.
Oh, my God. You cannot leave him without a Carmel Tiger if you come over here. I hope you know. I'll have, like, my best pitch face. You'll be done.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. But it's definitely going to be very cool for that thing to happen. So again, Rogue Reptiles on Facebook. RogueReptiles.com is in the middle of getting a facelift, so you can go there, but I'm telling you that there's a lot of pictures out of date, and we're redoing a lot of stuff, so avoid that if you have to or need to. Anyway, that's all I got.
Okay. All right. Great show, and thanks, Ed, for coming on, and until next week.
Yep. Until next week, we'll see everybody then.
All right.
Good night.
Good night. I love that girl.